I spent a lot of time just, you know, on my couch and closing my eyes and trying to do little exercises to help my brain out. But, you know, a lot of those years I just spent in the Psalms and writing pieces around the Psalms because I found that quite comforting to, like, when you can't do anything and you can't talk to people, like, what do you do, right?
Between the Grooves is hosted by James Curtis, music director and morning man in the Greater Toronto Area on Joy Radio, and Aisha Woods, Grammy-nominated singer, songwriter, and musician. Together, they talk with artists and industry insiders to discover our connection between music and faith. You can connect with us on Facebook or X at Between Grooves and on Instagram at Between Grooves Pod. Now, here's James and Aisha.
James, my friend, how are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm still kind of basking in the creative juices. Just last week, I had the opportunity to be part of a writing retreat, and it was so good. Like, the songs that came out of this retreat, whew, just being surrounded by people that are creative and innovative and incredibly talented and gifted.
So for some time away like that, when you get back, is it adrenaline or is it exhaustion?
Adrenaline.
Okay.
Definitely.
So you're still
adrenaline.
You're
My
still
mind
running.
Is still like, oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That's
yeah,
nice.
No doubt.
That's nice. It'll hit you in a couple of days, I'm sure. Be like, oh,
I know, right?
I need a nap.
Yeah.
Well, that's awesome. We're chatting with another songwriter today, Toronto-based jazz pianist, composer, Mike Jansen. Oh, we can hear you. Can you hear us?
There you are.
You can hear me, okay.
Are you in your home studio right now?
I am, yeah.
So can you share with us some of the gear that you got? I love talking gear. I like talking gadgets and microphones.
James is a gear guy.
I'm telling you.
He's a gear guy. Good. Well, what do I have here? I don't have, like, it's sort of like a working studios because I do a lot of writing more than producing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like I have a API 3124. So it's like a preamp.
Yeah.
You know what that is, James?
Yeah, yeah. You know what that is?
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
I have a couple of Neumann mics.
He's got
like
the good
TLM
quality stuff.
And TLM 67 and a couple of Neumann old, like, matched 84s.
Right.
And what else do I have in here?
You know what? Just the microphones. Just the microphones alone. That's at least $15,000 right there.
I know. They're not all mine, but they. You know, I've got some friends who just keep lending me gear, so I just keep it.
Yeah, don't remind them. It's like they don't ask
don't
for it back, they'll forget about it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mike, I was at the Covenant Awards last November, and I was enjoying this guy that was jazzing it up on the piano before the ceremony began. And honestly, I did not realize it was you until afterwards.
Yeah, it was fun to be a part of that. I'd been nominated just for a folk song of the year, which was just a little song I wrote, you know, saying thank you after a long concussion injury. But they invited me to play, like, you know, music before it started. So, yeah, I was I love jazz and gospel and blues. And so it was fun just to sort of rock out there for a few minutes.
A few minutes. I mean, you were in another world. just, I mean, you probably had to get somebody signal him to stop or something like that. It was really good. I enjoyed it. It was a nice surprise.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah, it was nice of them to ask, like, you know, it's not many times you get a chance to actually, like, let loose and solo and, you know, people are actually listening. So that was fun.
Mike, were you formally trained?
Yeah, I was formally trained. I started music pretty young. Like at four, someone threw a violin into my hand. So I started playing that and I don't think that sounded very good. And then,
four years old. I could just imagine.
Oh man. It's like a horror movie. parents, you know, parents who get their kids in strings, they deserve, I don't know what they deserve, but.
Well, parents in strings
or
parents in strings or parents on drums. Cause it's the same.
Oh
yes,
man.
Yes, sir.
Bagpipes. No. And then in grade three, I sort of decided, like, you know, I saw all these, there's all these great piano crossover artists, you know, who were doing like, they put classical songs into their pop, you know, like Michael W. Smith or Keith Green or David Meese or all these really great sort of piano players, singers.
Sure.
And I was like, what? You can do this? And so I was like, I begged my parents, can I, you know, can I start piano lessons? And they said, oh, sure. So yeah, and that was grade three. And then I just sort of, you know, kept playing that in junior high. People thought because I played violin, I played double bass too, which wasn't true. And then and then I played drums because I needed a band instrument. So I decided percussion would be the easiest way through that. So just slowly I started playing all these different instruments, but piano was the one I ended up sort of falling in love with.
What about guitar?
Yeah, I did play guitar too, especially like in the 90s. No one really wanted to see a keyboard on stage.
That's right. It went from keyboard to guitar, and then guitar was the big thing.
Yeah, the 90s were rough. Keyboard player. Because the 80s were so good. You know,
that's right.
But so then I did play acoustic, you know, as I fronted a band called the Penny Merchants. But I would usually just play a couple
Penny
of songs.
Merchants.
The Penny Merchants, yeah. Then I get backboard. I wouldn't play too much.
Can you tell us a little bit about this concussion thing? I recall hearing something a ways back, and then I think you even mentioned it briefly at the Covenant Awards. I think you were on stage and you made mention of the fact that you were still kind of recovering. It never really went away, I suppose.
Yeah, back in 2016, you know, life was going pretty well. I felt like a lot of things were about to take off, and I got up in the middle of the night and drank some water and, you know, took two steps and everything went completely black. And I passed out and fell face first right into the tile floor in our basement. And I think 10, 15 seconds later, my wife like was by my side trying to wake me up. And she said, are you okay? Like what happened? And I said, I don't know what happened. I have no idea. And I just stumbled back to bed. And the next morning, I woke up and, you know, everything looked blurry. My computer screen looked weird. And outside it looked strange. Like, you know, just light looked weird. And my kids' voices sounded weird. And so I phoned my friend up and I said, like, here's my symptoms. And what do you think? And she said, oh, yeah, it's a concussion. So I said, well, how long will I be out? And she said, well, probably, I don't know, a week or two. I said, a week or two? I can't be out for a week or two. I've got all these gigs coming up. And but she said, well, you just got to rest. So I rested. But as, you know, the time went on, you know, a few weeks led to a month. And by the end of the month, I felt just horrific. Like I couldn't walk down the street without getting really nauseous and dizzy. I couldn't take any light or any sound. So like no radio, no music, nothing. I couldn't talk to people without getting really dizzy. So it was really, became really tricky. And, you know, I went to the hospital. They did a brain scan and found nothing. Is that good? I think that's good. But
no, hang on. They found the brain, obviously.
I think they did.
Okay.
They didn't find
anything wrong with it. That's what you're saying.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know. Maybe that was missing. anyway, so that just began a long, you know, sort of recovery that had a lot of bumps in it. And really for the next few years, three and a half years, I just could not do anything. And anytime I tried to, I would be out for even longer. So it just, you know, it felt like there was just no way really through it except to rest. So I spent a lot of time just, you know, on my couch and closing my eyes and trying to do little exercises to help my brain out. You know, a lot of those years I just spent in the Psalms and writing pieces around the Psalms, because I found that quite comforting to like when you can't do anything and you can't talk to people, like, what do you do? Right. And then praying too, like I didn't really feel like I had the brain power to really pray much. So the Psalms were such a gift in those days, just to be able to, you know, read a verse or two. I wasn't actually well enough to read a whole chapter, so I'd read a couple of verses and just sort of sit with that. And then obviously, because I love music, I'd have to try to put that to music, right? So so over the course of 3-4 years, I think I had a few thousand voice memos, and most of them were not very good. But, you know, there was a couple there that eventually ended up being, you know, songs that I released
later on, huh?
You know,
right.
I don't know.
As I got better, exactly. Yeah.
If you recall Jaylene Johnson, she's the, I guess, the VP of the Covenant Awards. And mm-hmm. a number of years ago, she lost her voice. And that's got to be devastating for anybody who bases their career on music or as an artist or whatever. Like for her, she's a singer-songwriter, and if she can't sing, what is she supposed to do? For you, you're a musician, you play the keys, you play a bunch of other instruments, you write music, you sing, and you perform, and that's how that's your livelihood. So what do you do during this recovery time? Like there's no backup plan for someone like you to make a living.
No, there is absolutely no backup plan, especially I'm not that good at anything else either. So this is the full plan. And it was quite stressful at first because, I mean, that's the hardest part to deal with when you have a serious injury and your musician is, you know, how are you going to pay the bills, feed your family, keep your house? Because, yeah, there's no insurance plan or workers' comp or anything like that. So, I mean, we were really, really fortunate. A few things began to happen. I had a couple friends who would play gigs for me and then send me the money. And then I also had Steve
Those
Bell.
Those are real friends.
Yeah.
Those are real friends. Yeah. Steve Bell, sort of right when this happened, he contacted a whole bunch of artists and people sort of in the arts community, and suddenly, you know, money started coming in from that. I had a few other really close friends who basically just came to me and said, look, like, as long as this takes, we are going to get behind you. We want you to rest.
Yeah.
We don't want you to stress. We're going to take care of, you know, payments and food. And like, we're going to just cover you for the next few years. So,
wow.
I mean, I don't think they even knew it was going to be a couple years. They just said, as long as it takes. And that's, you know, it's sort of a bit of that Good Samaritan kind of story, right? Where, you know, the Good Samaritan says, as long as it takes, fit me, give the bill to me. So we had that, and we had, you know, our community, our church community was fantastic. One time there was a lineup down the street of cars dropping off food, and, you know, people would, one of the funny stories is my friend, when it was Valentine's Day, like I couldn't really talk much to my wife. So it was Valentine's Day. And he said, you know what, just let me take care of it, you know? And so he bought her like the best Valentine's Day gift she's ever gotten in her life. And, you know, just all the little things. Like I tell people nowadays, and I try to tell myself too, that if anyone's going through something, just do something. You know, often we'll send out a text or phone people and say, hey, what do you need? Which sometimes it's helpful because the person actually knows what they need, but sometimes they don't know what they need. And, you know, just to sort of jump in and say, you know what, I'm good at this. I'm just going to do it. Or, you know, I'm just going to buy a meal, or I'm just going to take them out, their kid out to go to the park for an hour. You know, all these little things. I mean, for a few years, I really was no good to anybody. And, there was just thousands of kind acts given to our family that I know I'll never really be able to repay.
That's amazing. You think of the power of music, because even throughout this time, you were still writing and had song ideas. You said you had thousands of voice memos, right?
Yeah.
And these voice memos translated into songs. What are some of the songs that came out of that that season or that portion of your life?
Yeah. So, you know, one of the first Psalms I ended up reading was Psalm 42, where it says, by day the Lord directs his love, at night his song is with me. And that was like a really simple thing, like brain injuries or mental illness. Often what you have to do is really slow down your head and just sort of bring calmness to your head because you're quite stressed out and it's that classic fight and flight response in your head.
Sure.
And you have to sort of slow it down. And so I would use verses like that one and sort of create simple melodies to sing them back. Out of that season, I released, I guess it was 4 years or 5 years after, I first gathered, you know, together 14, 15 songs and played them for a few of my friends who I trusted. And I said, like, are these any good? Or you can be honest with me, it's okay. And they said, you know, I think these are good. Let's get together and sing them. So we got a group together at a little retreat center, near Guelph, and it's called the Abbey, and we sang a whole bunch of these songs and recorded video for them. And out of that came something called the Psalms Project, where there was 19, 20 songs initially that I released as part of that. And most of them like were very reflective and meditative and contemplative. Probably good for people, especially, you know, who wanted quieter, gentler music. But I had a few extra songs kicking around that were more upbeat, and they just didn't quite fit the first two albums. So eventually I pulled those together a few years ago, and I sent them to my friend Timothy Abraham, who produces. And I said, like, here's a bunch of other songs that didn't make the first two albums. Is there anything here that's any good, or should I just sort of trash it? And I was quite surprised when he responded. He said, I think this is some of your best stuff ever. And I said, no, like, this is the leftovers. Like, I don't think I'm not sure there's much here. And he said, no, let me produce it. Like, I got a vision for this. Let me do it. So I usually self-produce my stuff, but this time I thought, let's get him to produce it. And so that's the latest album called Songs from the Canyon. I wrote a couple extra, more gospely, funky songs to go on there just because I love that music.
That's the stuff you're getting into, sure. Aisha, yeah?
Yes, I love it. Yeah. Golly, it's so good.
I love
good.
It. Oh, man. Just makes me feel alive, you know? So so I did write a few extra songs to go on the latest album, but the latest album is more cinematic and muscular and bigger and lots of textures and... songs about creation and songs also about lament and sort of suffering in the world.
I gotta say, Mike, if you didn't have the musical background that you have and even the jazz element to your career, you wouldn't probably be able to come up with the songs like you just described, that funky groovy beat to them.
Yeah, you know, I do love, there's something about improvising and music that has a little more emotion in it and a little more of a groove and backbeat that I just really resonate with. I think I always liked jazz even as a kid. Like, I grew up in a town that was more classical music, I'd say. But whenever I'd hear like a band, like, you know, that had, you know, Sting when he'd do something jazzy, or like maybe Huey Lewis in the News, or, you know, you know, sort of these older groups, but they'd have some jazz in it. I'd always be like, ooh, I like that. So when I graduated from University of Toronto, I did my master's in composing. So that's led to a lot of like, you know, string arranging stuff. And I love that whole thing. But as soon as I graduated, I was like, I think I just need to be, you know, playing jazz. So I met a whole bunch of great, great players at U of T because they have a fantastic jazz program. And so I just started, you know, going to restaurants and saying, do you need some jazz tonight? And sort of hitting the street, finding gigs. And so for a whole bunch of years, I sort of was practicing hours and hours every day of jazz and learning tunes. And, you know, now I'm using it more in a mix of pop and jazz and funk and all that. But, there's something about that music that definitely resonates, you know, with my personality. Maybe it's because I couldn't, you know, classical musicians have to nail the same thing over and over again.
Sure.
And whereas me, I can't play the same thing twice. So it's probably a good fit.
Yeah. I love that.
You've done the jazz scene. Obviously, you were part of a jazz trio. You've also done, obviously, solo work. Do you have a preference between the two?
I don't think that I do. You know, there is something really rewarding about supporting others. Like when you're in a group, and even if you're not the lead guy, there's something I love about supporting others and just doing anything you can to make the group sound good. And there's also something super rewarding about, you know, working on your own stuff, and you can sort of say things that are in your heart and write lyrics yes. that are in your heart and sort of control, you know, who you hire for different things. So that's something really nice about sure. being a solo artist too. So I don't know if I, you know, right now, the season I'm in, I am doing more of my own thing. And I probably miss sometimes having the band experience more when you're doing your own thing all the time. But it is also a season that I think both are, for me, pretty valuable.
Mm-hmm. So what makes your day happen? Like, what are you doing on a day-to-day basis? And I'm asking because a lot of times people think that artists are, the only way they can make money is to be on stage and performing all the time. And so, you know, they're busy touring on weekends or for a couple of weeks straight, maybe in the summertime and whatnot. What does a day in the life of Mike look like?
Yeah, it completely changes from week to week and month to month. Mm. Sometimes I really am working a lot of my own stuff. So like I have a bunch of shows coming up. I'm doing these big Psalms project shows with like choir, string orchestra and band. So wow. it takes quite a bit of work. So I'm doing one in Calgary coming up. I also have a show I orchestrated called Reimagining Broadway that's happening in Quebec City in April. So those are sort of bigger things. And then, you know, day to day, sometimes I get hired to do different things. Right now I'm working on a couple of string arrangements for some French singers out from Winnipeg. There's an actor, Jason Hildebrandt, who wants me to score a movie for him that he's putting out. And then I'm also working on little piano pieces. They're like neoclassical. So they're like 3 minutes long. And it's all about the organicness of them. They're like sort of like Chopin waltzes, wow. but in a bit more of a pop situation. So I have a whole thing on Spotify that I, you know, do for that as well and try to put out material. And I'm working at some jazz stuff right now. I have a jazz project that I recorded a while back with Larnell Lewis and some other people, and I'm trying to get that out too. So for me, I do jump around a bit. Sometimes mm-hmm, it's my mm-hmm. own stuff, sometimes it's others.
But if you are jumping around like that, how do you stay organized and not get distracted? Like, how do you prioritize what needs to happen? Because obviously you have to make an income too, right?
Yeah, exactly. So my own stuff doesn't pay that well. So, you know, that's the balance that you have to sort of strike. Like, you know, if you're playing and out there on the road or touring, you do make money. But it is a little harder, you know, unless you're a big, big artist, it is a little harder on Spotify to actually make, you know, a living or on streaming, sure. right? Of people just playing your music. So yeah, right. for me, it's a juggling thing where some days or some weeks I'm like, you know, I got to work on some other projects that actually pay. And then other times you're like, you know what? It's January. It's just after Christmas. I'm just going to work on my own stuff this month. So, you know, it's just different, mm-hmm. Different seasons for sure.
And what is pressure for you? I mean, do you ever feel under the gun where you got to get something done? And now, you know, like people who work a 9-to-5 job, they can have stress in their lives. You know, the boss is breathing down their neck about something or they got a project that they have to complete. Whereas you've got a whole bunch of stuff you're juggling at the same time.
Right.
Do you have somebody breathing down your neck?
I need someone.
Probably his wife.
I'm happy if you know anyone who's a good fire breather. It's tricky. It is tricky. I mean, the honest truth is I struggle. I'm really good with deadlines usually. So if I have a deadline coming up, I'm usually pretty good at hitting it. And I work pretty hard till that happens. But it is really hard to juggle too many things. I am sort of these days trying to find a bit of a team around me so I don't have to quite juggle quite as much. Because, you know, right. in social media too right now, I mean, I guess you guys know this too, but there's just so many things to stay on top of, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And like, you, the list is endless. You could literally spend a whole full-time job just keeping up on social media stuff. So, yeah, there's definitely balls that get dropped. That's for sure.
you mentioned about hitting the deadline, and there's obviously lots of fun that you have doing what you do. Do you ever get to a point where it's not fun because you've got to hit the deadline?
Yeah, you know, yeah, for sure. There are seasons that, or certain deadlines where you're just up too late too many times in a row, and it's not a whole lot of fun on anybody. And usually, you know, with a family too, and young kids still, you know, that's often where you feel it is. There's a whole world and life going on at home too. So often with a deadline, I'm really good at you know, going deep into something and then just working really hard and enjoying it until it's done. But the problem is the people around you, that's not always easy for them. So right. That's the hardest, probably, balance, is just making sure I'm a good dad still and husband while I'm really dialed into deadlines. 'Cause I do love what I do. When I have a deadline, I tend to love it.
You work well under pressure, sounds like.
I think so. I think I do. I mean, I think a lot of musicians probably they struggle with deadlines, right? Like, 'cause your schedule is fairly open. You're, you know, self-employed.
Until
it's not, exactly.
Right.
So, you know, I think as an artist, it is helpful to, you know, have those deadlines, even for projects of your own, where you don't actually have a deadline. Because things just don't get done if you don't have a date. And sometimes with artists I'm working with, I'll just say, you know, can you give me a date of when you want this?
Right.
Because if you don't give me a date, you might not see it for a long time. So, deadlines.
Outside of deadlines, what does your downtime look like? As in vacation or hobbies outside of music and
I probably work too many hours, people would say, but I do take some good breaks. And the thing that I love to do, I just love getting outdoors. I grew up in like rural Manitoba out in the country, and you know, I was that kid who was, you know, wandering in our back pasture, building rafts and collecting tadpoles and building forts and stuff like that. So I think, probably for most people, nature can rejuvenate them, but especially for me, I need to sort of get out to water and trees and rocks. So we do have, every year we go out, to Manitoba for a bunch of weeks. We have some family cottages where, you know, we can just swim and do no work and, just enjoy hiking around out there. And I think with our family in general, we try to prioritize, you know, going on trips or, you know, getting to a cottage somewhere or getting hiking or I like to paddleboard. So I like to go down to the lake here in Ontario and go paddleboarding for a while. I think the thing that helps rejuvenate me is often being out in nature.
You know, I think a lot of self-employed people struggle with, I'll use the word boundaries, and what I mean by boundaries is either spending too much time working or the flip side, not enough time working, too much time, you know, taking the, you know, the pleasures of life, the fun time, whether it's with the family or going on a vacation and whatnot. So what do you do to set boundaries? Like, do you have a clock in your studio that says, okay, I'm only staying in here till 5 p.m. and then after that, my priority is my family. You know, because for me, I could just get...
Do you have to?
Yeah, like I could get sucked into something so easily and have fun doing it, and then I've kind of forgotten what the other priorities are as well, right? And and that's important too. You need the downtime. You need the time just to put your feet up as well, right?
Right, right.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, I'm open to suggestions. I think, you know, the rhythms of family for me are helpful. I do really, really love what I do. So I would be that guy who, you know, just sort of starts working and then, you know, midnight hits and you forgot to eat, you know, that kind of thing. When I was on my own, that's the way it was. And that was not good for my health. Like I definitely had a lot of stomach problems and it wasn't a good thing. So it's so helpful to have, you know, my lovely wife, Jody, who, you know, usually around 5:30, I get a text saying it's supper or, you know, come on in, or the girls need you, or we got to go to dance practice or whatever. So the natural rhythms of family, I think, really help protect me from working too hard. And it's hard, right? Because when a song, it's hard to leave a song at 30%, right? Like you're working on a song and, you know, right before you're about to go in, you're finally in that place of like, oh, I got it. And then you get, you know, there's a ding or there's a text and you're like, oh shoot. Yeah. It's time to switch gears here. So now when I have really big things coming up, obviously sometimes I go a lot longer, but, I think just the balance for me has been so much better since I've been married, because there's actually, you know, people to hang with who love me and who I can build into. So that really helps.
Let's see how bad Mike Jansen really is, okay? Here's a scenario. You got the text from your wife, it's dinner time. Number one, do you go right away? Or do you say I'll be there in 20 minutes? And, sorry, this is a two-part question. Once you've had dinner, once you've spent time with the kids and whatnot, are you looking at your watch thinking, I can get back to my work?
I got to go back to it.
Yeah, yep. I got to go back at 9 o'clock. That's my goal, is to get back. Because that's the type of guy I would be. So what are you like, Mike?
Yeah. Do you want the honest answer or the not honest answer? Yeah.
The honest answer. I mean, I know it's hard, you know?
I think I don't go in right away often. It usually is probably 5, 10, 15, 20, 30 minutes later.
Okay. Sometimes. But maybe your wife has learned that she has to give you the 30-minute notice then, right?
I think she does know that.
So that's fair.
I think she does. And I have a rule that I don't – like once I'm in but this is sort of funny. So when I'm in, I try to be fully present and not get back out here. But I could hear Aisha laughing there. Cause you know, the truth is when 9:30, 10 hits and everyone's going to bed and I'm still wide awake.
Isn't that the best time?
Yeah. Wait a minute. What should I do now? And maybe I'll go back in the studio and just see how that song sounded, or, you know, and I would say 60% of the time, 70% of the time, I don't really do that as much anymore. But if I'm just feeling it, sometimes, you know, if you're feeling it, you just got to get out there and finish it off. So yeah, sometimes I do go out later at night.
Well, when you're feeling it though, it could be like, you know what? I just need 20 more minutes. I just need 20 more minutes and I can, and it's done. And then 3 hours later, you're still, you know, wrapping things up, you know?
Gosh, sounds like my
husband. I love this. You guys understand this. You know how it works.
Yeah. And then the problem is then you wonder why you're tired the next day and you can't perform, because it's like, I got it done.
I know. Totally. And you know, with kids, like, they are going to get up. Like, there's no like, can we just sleep in today? Like, you know, they're going to get up.
No.
They're going to get up exactly as early as usual. So it's always sort of funny. Like in the moment, you're feeling like you're on the top of wherever, Mount Everest, you know, you're thinking like, I just finished that song. It's 2 a.m. And then the next morning comes and you're like, I've made a horrible, horrible error.
Right. I can reassure you, Mike, that as your kids get, because your kids are fairly young still, as your kids enter the teen years and older, you don't have to worry about that whole sleeping in issue, because they will sleep in later than you, no matter what time you went to bed the night before.
Oh, I can't wait.
You mentioned you have some projects happening, I guess, this summer in Quebec City and whatnot. What is that? Is that kind of where you're headed towards as far as doing more of these projects?
Yeah, I've been trying to organize like sort of Psalms concert tours. I have a few people I'm working with on that to bring it across Canada. And then we'll see about the States. I'm not sure yet. I find it really, really rewarding in this season. I think when I had my injury you know, I was out of it for so many years, and I really, really didn't know if I'd ever get back to playing music again. I didn't know, you know, what my future held, if that was it, sort of. And so now when I'm doing these Psalms concerts, you know, there are so many people going through so much suffering and hardship and struggle and illness. And so doing these concerts, I feel the Psalms are just such a lifeline to people who are going through hard things. So I do feel right now that in this season, that's something I love doing. And the more of them I can do, the better.
And would these be trips that you take with your family? Like, it's the summertime, so the kids are out of school.
Yeah. Summertime, I still will not do a whole lot.
Okay.
I grew up with two teachers as parents, and, you know, in summer, we often took it off and we just did stuff.
Yes.
So I've adopted that model for now. So I don't book much in the summer. But yes, for spring and fall, I definitely, I try to take them when I can, you know, if they don't have to be in school.
I'd like to.
That's nice.
I'd like to adopt that
model.
That model, yeah. I'd like to take 2 or 3 months off in the summertime.
It's really great. Nice.
I mean, you think about it. It's wonderful for a musician or an artist to be able to take that time.
Right.
Because usually that's one of the busiest seasons.
Yeah, with the summer
artists.
Festivals
They're
and everything else.
Touring.
That's right. Especially
so
Mike in Canada. Canada, why would you be touring in the wintertime? You'd want to be doing it in the summertime.
Yeah, wait a minute. What am I doing?
That's neat.
I should change it up.
You're going to flip it around.
What am I doing? Got to come up with some more Florida tours in winter or something. I don't know.
Come on, man. Bring it on down.
Yeah. That's right.
You got to rethink this here.
Mike, thanks so much for hanging with us. Really enjoyed our conversation.
Hey, amazing. Thanks, Aisha and James. Thanks for putting up with me for an hour. Thanks. That was fun.
Mike Jensen on Between the Grooves. That was such a great conversation. Right now, we're going to take a listen to some artist advice from Ben Grace.
Be real. And by that, I mean, I think we've had, you know, Christian music around for several generations now. As when I say Christian music around, I mean like commercialized Christian music, you know, CCM, all that kind of thing. And I think there has become a language that feels dated, and it feels like we just are using the same things. I feel like, you know, sometimes I'll cynically laugh and be just like, I can finish the end of your sentence. I know what word you're going to use. But we're all living in the real world, and we've all lived through, you know, COVID and things that we've just been talking about. And I think we can use real words to talk about those things. You know, the Psalms is full of real words that were contextualized to, you know, the people at that time. And we're describing the whole breadth of emotion. And I think that we need more realness in Christian music, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, I tend to agree. A lot of music these days sounds so much the same. That's the reason why I even tell my kids that the music from my era, like when I was a teen, is so much better than their music. And I'm sure every parent does that anyways. But, you know, my son agrees.
To that place.
My son agrees. my son, like, his playlist has a lot of songs from my era, and he loves the stuff. So I understand what he's saying there. And then I really like Ben's reference to the Psalms, because we just finished chatting with Mike about that whole thing as well, right? So that was kind of nice to hear.
It's so good. And one thing will always remain, like, you can never go wrong if you're going to be singing or talking about the Word of God.
Right.
You're just solid.
And, you know, to be quite frank, the Psalms make it really easy for you.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes, indeed.
Versus other books of the Bible.
Psalms that have been written.
Exactly. Well, thank you to Ben Grace. Thank you to Mike Jansen for a great chat on Between the Grooves this week. We will see you next week.
Same time, same place.
Sounds good to me.
Thanks for listening to Faith Strong Today's Between the Grooves podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, would you consider sharing it with your friends? Rating our podcast or giving us some love on your socials to your amazing friends and followers will only help us reach more people. We'd also love to hear from you and share your feedback in an upcoming episode. Send your video or written message to Aisha and James on Facebook or X at Between Grooves and on Instagram at Between Grooves Pod. Or email us anytime, hello@faithstrongtoday.com.